but the intelligent magnetic part, with its organic structure, that which belongs to it as a spirit, can absent itself from the body, and very often does, particularly when the body is under the control of a foreign spirit. By Theodore Parker, February 25, 1868. Question. In the Banner of Light of January 11, the controlling spirit says, many of the planets have passed out of their material into their spiritual orbits, as the Earth will do by and by. Will you give a more definite explanation of this statement? Answer. Planets, as well as spirits, have an inner and an outer life. It has been said, and truthfully too, that all things have a soul. This being true, the planets cannot be an exception. It presupposes that there will come a time in the experiences of planetary life when each skill pass out of the material orbit into a spiritual one, one which shall become so ethereal, so spiritual, so far removed from crude matter, unrefined matter, as to be able to sustain only spiritual existences. It is a well-known geological, scientific fact, that the animals that existed upon this planet thousands of years ago could by no means exist here today, because the planet has grown more spiritual. It has ascended from a rude, undeveloped material, into a more refined spiritual condition, and it will continue to ascend. That is the law. It is the law of all things, planets and souls. This has been proved beyond question, not by souls on Earth, surely, but by those who have passed beyond Earth. But everything moves on in slow and distinct degrees, so slow that your human senses can scarce take cognizance of the movement, except by comparing past and present. You cannot understand that this earth is not today what it was yesterday. But it is so much nearer the spiritual plane. You say, "Aoy, it seems to me to be just the same." So it is, when weighed and measured in the balances of finite reason. But when weighed and measured by infinite, immutable law, it is not the same. Understand us to affirm that all planets, all things, it matters not what, from the grain of sand under your feet to the worlds in the spaces, which you cannot reach with the external vision, are all possessed of souls, inner lives, germs which propel them out of crude materialism into spiritual existence. They change their forms and their conditions to correspond with the needs of their inner being. When the soul, the germ that exists despite all the storms of physical life, which outlives all, when it can no longer manifest itself, unfold itself through these physical forms, then, what then? Why, it enters another orbit, and revolves that till it has performed its mission, then it enters another, and I believe there is no bound to it. I can find no starting place for matter, I can find no place where it ends. This was at page 142. By Theodore Parker, March 2, 1868. Question. I notice in many of the communications to your circle, and published in your paper, the spirits say it is hard to come back, to communicate to us here, I suppose. With some it costs them great exertion and much trouble or labor, others study a long time the way to get back before they learn it, some have just learned that such a thing was possible, and see. I wish to ask how this is, when they have been communicating with us here for so long a time, and all over the world. Answer. While an idea is struggling through its imperfect or incipient stage, that idea finds it very hard to express itself, even though under somewhat favorable conditions. All kinds of growth are such by virtue of the struggle they pass through. Everything that is growing is struggling. The little shoot that comes up out of the ground in spring struggles to break through the surface of the earth, that the sun may warm it into greater strength. So it is with regard to all kinds of growth, mental, moral, vegetable, physical, animal, spiritual, every kind of growth is subject to this rude experience. Now, it should be remembered that nearly all the intelligences that come to this place to communicate, are such as have not the sympathy of their friends to whom they come. They do not believe that they can return. They come and throw their wish upon the waters of human life, praying that it may receive a favorable answer. They know that they shall meet cold unbelief in most cases, and, knowing this, it is very hard for them to communicate. When the desire on the part of the earthly friend is earnest for them to come, it is generally far easier for the spirit to come in rapport with the medium and communicate. But even under the very best conditions, it is sometimes hard. The returning spirit fears to pass through the struggle, which is in some respects like unto death. This return, this being clothed upon with mortality again, is by no means an easy thing. It is generally fraught with fear, encompassed about with a certain doubt and fear that the spirit cannot at first overcome. Indeed, there are a variety of conditions that the spirit is obliged to come in harmony with, in order to communicate with the friends it has left on earth, and sometimes, as often as it overcomes one, another, and a still greater, presents itself, till the spirit gets weary and retires. By Lorenzo Dow, March 3, 1868. Question. Does Lavoisier continue his experiments on the crystallization of carbon? And did he arrive at a satisfactory result? If so, is he willing to communicate his experiments to mortals? Answer. Here you are again, as of old, you mortals, asking to know how you can enrich yourselves with the things of this world, with the toys that pass out of your hands perhaps at the next breath. Ayo, how shall we crystallize carbon in order to make it valuable? This chemist, who threw away a large portion of his best energies in this direction, is in one sense very sorry that he did so, because he did so from wrong motives, and in another he is very glad, because it has led him out of certain dark places into lighter ones. He would inform you, were he here speaking, no doubt, that if there are any individuals on the earth who desire to know what he knows with regard to this subject, simply because they desire to gain good and to do good, he will exercise all the powers of his being to transmit that knowledge to them. But if they desire it from selfish, unwise purposes, he would be the last spirit to return, giving that knowledge. Carbon in the coal and carbon in the diamond, we are told, are precisely the same. But the crystallization depends upon the peculiar soil in which it is found, upon atmospheric and climatic conditions, upon the peculiar condition that exists between the rays of light and the soil where the carbon exists. If you can ascertain just how to regulate this natural machine, you have effected your desire. If you can talk to the sun, and find out how he will send down just such a peculiar kind of light and shade as you need to crystallize the carbon here in this northern clime, perhaps you can make diamonds. But if the sun could speak, I rather think he would be pretty likely to tell you that he and the soil, for instance, of Brazil, can do far better in that way than all the chemists on earth, or in the spirit spheres. By Theodore Parker, March 5, 1868. Question. Will you explain the difference, if any exists, between the willpower and mesmeric influences? Also their different modes of operation? Answer. The willpower in each individual differs according to the capacities of the individual, and yet it is willpower, after all. Their willpower that the mesmerist exercises over the mesmeric subject is simply willpower. It is his or hers. Their willpower that belongs to the subject is willpower, nothing more nor less. But it belongs to the mesmeric subject, not to the mesmeric operator. Willpower is that force by which all spiritual motion is made. It is the life of intellect, mental motion. Without it there could be no exercise of mentality. Question. The material universe, and, as far as we can understand, the spiritual universe also, are governed by fixed laws. Now, law implies a lawmaker, or, in other words, an intelligence. Is that intelligence an individualized intelligence? If not, in what sense are we made in the image of God, and after his likeness? God being assumed to be the name of the author of these laws by which all things are governed? Answer. Your correspondent, like thousands of others, is laboring under a great mistake when he confounds God's laws with human laws, For human laws presuppose the existence of a lawmaker, but it is not so with divine laws. To my mind, the law of life is the God of life, the power by which all life is expressed and perfected. It is the personification of the divine power. Wherever you see it, under whatever conditions it manifests, it is God. The law operating in soils, in minerals, in the atmosphere, in the water, in the skies, everywhere is God. There is no power outside of this law that we can recognize as God. No great intelligence fashioned with a human body. By no means. And, the sooner you cast off this mental and theological darkness, the sooner you will rise into clearer light. I know it is almost impossible for the human mind to conceive of law without conceiving of a lawmaker, but I know, also, that the impossibility arises from your education here, and from nothing else. You go to work here, and you make laws for the various departments in life. There is the maker. There is the law. It is not so with the law that governs in the universe. It is not so with the law that holds you and me in our proper places. It is not so with that power which determines concerning our well-being. It is a power, an all-pervading existence, that has all forms for its own, but claims no specialty of form whatever. Man is made in the image of God simply because he holds within his physical form all the elements that exist in the universe. There is nothing, no kind of life, that man in the physical does not hold within himself. He is a microcosm of all beneath him, and stands as the crowning glory of creation. In this sense, and in this alone, may he be said to be created in the image of God. Because created in the image of all things beneath him, he represents all things, holds all things, embraces everything. In this sense is he in the image of God. By Reverend Joseph Lowenthal, March 9, 1868. Question. Was the organization known as the Order of Eternal Progress organized alone by mortals, or did spirits out of the form favor and assist? Answer. An organization corresponding to that which has lately been instituted in your mortal world, has been in process of action in the spirit world for a long, long series of ages, and through certain media mystic minds, certain ideas have been transmitted to you in mortal, and you are just beginning to put forth in active life. Question. Does the prevalence of spiritualism tend to lessen the proper appreciation of human life? The question is asked in all sincerity, in view of some of the terrible crimes, involving murder, sometimes perpetrated by persons professing to be spiritualists. Answer. Spiritualism, pure and unadulterated, teaches us that the gift of life, in all its many phases, is the greatest and best boon that the Creator has conferred upon his children, and that none has the right to seek to change the conditions of time for those of what you call eternity. It is the duty of all to seek to prolong their lives here, till the spirit can no longer express itself through the mortal form. Then, in a natural, harmonious manner, the spirit will pass out and enjoy the glories of that higher life. Spiritualism teaches that the suicide and the murderer find more unhappiness there than they can by any possibility find here. Spiritualism proposes to enlighten the soul concerning its highest interests, whether of time or of eternity. Spiritualism does not teach that you shall infringe, or seek to, upon any law of your mortal or spiritual being. It teaches how you may become in harmony with the law, and by becoming in harmony, you learn the way to heaven. It is only when you are in harmony with the laws that are governing you that you are in heaven, or can by any possibility know what true happiness is. And if you seek to infringe upon the law, it will rebuke you always with the sternest severity. It matters not whether you are here or there. The law does not leave you at death. It follows you beyond the tomb. Question. It seems to be the opinion of a large number of spiritualists that woman is entitled to exercise authority equally with man, in all the duties of life. What would be the result, in a case of man and wife, where there was a difference of opinion in matters of business? Answer. That woman is mentally, morally, socially, and spiritually the equal of man, we do certainly know. Physically, she is his inferior, and by being physically inferior to man, she is raised just so much higher in the spiritual scale, has become just so much more spiritual, just so much more intuitive, just so much in advance of man, with regard to the things of the real life. Now, with reference to the question that you have propounded, your speaker can perhaps give very little valuable advice, and yet what I am able to give will be given in all sincerity, with a purpose entirely honest, and I should hope entirely separated from all favoritism with regard to the man or woman. In matters of business, that which relates to things of this world, that which takes in the merchandise of human life, deals with those forms that are current here, the man knows generally more about than the woman. Why? Because he has lived more in that atmosphere than she. He has dwelt more steadily there than she has. He has become more accustomed to and assimilated with these conditions than the woman has. Therefore, considering the case in that light, he should stand preeminent to the woman in regard to this particular kind of wisdom. But when considered from another standpoint, the woman rises above him, and it is from this standpoint that we behold her spiritually his superior, even in this respect. Her intuitions being more unfolded, it is sometimes very possible that the intimate friends of the man, in the spirit world, may be able to shed their influence upon the woman with regard to what is best to be done even in the things of this life. The woman may be able to receive the very best portion of spiritual knowledge with regard to the things here, while the man's senses may be entirely closed to them. And as man stands side by side with woman, and as God recognizes them both as standing upon one plane of life, it behooves both to seek to understand each other, and in seeking to understand, you seek to improve each other, too. Woman should lend of her wisdom to the man, and the man should lend of his physical strength to the woman. There should be an harmonious action between the two, else there is no heaven for them. Nothing but health and well with the man and the woman who are inharmonious to each other, in any sense whatever. The time is coming when the man and the woman will learn how near they stand to God, and how God is speaking to them through all the different forms of life. And when they understand this, they will hearken unto the voice, and harmony will come where inharmony now reigns supreme. By Lorenzo Dow, March 10, 1868. Question. Have spirits, besides thought or mental communion among themselves, also the audible voice sound which some seem to affirm? Answer. The law of correspondences is an absolute and perfect law everywhere, not only here, but in the spirit world proper. Yes, we do have that which is equivalent to sound. It is such to the disembodied spirit. It would not be such to you, because the applications could not be made successfully to your human senses. The auditory nerves would not vibrate under the sound that belongs to the spirit world proper, but the auditory nerves of the spirit body will vibrate under the sounds of the spirit world. Every condition of life is regulated by its own special laws. There are laws pertaining to nature, laws pertaining to mind, and laws pertaining to every degree of mind and matter, and governing each in their own proper sphere. Question. It has been said that all things in nature must take upon themselves a second life, that is, the spiritual. Does not the earth, this planet, which we inhabit, come under the same law? Will it not enter a more spiritual or ethereal life? Answer. It certainly will. This planet is dying constantly. By and by the death change will become so complete that it will pass out of its material orbit and enter a spiritual orbit, or become the dwelling place of ethereal beings, and not the dwelling place for material beings. All things, all forms, every condition of being of which you can conceive, has its inner and its outer life. The inner is the propelling power, the outer is the expression of that power. The outer changes constantly. Through an infinite number of degrees it passes, till it becomes so etherealized or spiritualized as to be no longer recognized by material senses. Mark us, everything has its inner and its outer life. Question. Is it not probable, then, that these spiritual forms that have passed from the earth sphere will finally return to inhabit the same places again as they once inhabited in the body? Answer. It is certainly not impossible. Question. I would ask, as bearing upon the first question, what is the philosophy of spirit in flux? Ideas are communicated by sounds or words, in which case the ear is the medium, also through forms, as by letters, and see, where the eye is the medium. Now, what is the philosophy of spirit in flux where the senses are not appealed to? Answer. Sometimes the perceptive faculties are made use of as agents to convey thought from one mind to another. Under some circumstances a thought is no sooner rounded into form in one mind, than another catches it up, and another, and so on till it is lost in the distance. Question. You say thought is rounded into form. I can conceive of a bubble being rounded into form and then vanishing into air. Is it the same with a thought? Answer. It certainly is. You cannot conceive of the reality of thought simply because you cannot measure it by your human senses, you cannot weigh it, you cannot materially deal with it. Now, thought is to humanity the intangible, the unreal, it is the fleeting. But to the disembodied spirit it is the real, the tangible, it is the life. This was at page 151. Yes, thoughts are rounded into form just the same as bubbles are, as worlds are, as dewdrops are. Everything begins with a cycle and ends with a cycle. Question. Has not man a direct destiny placed before him, a road in which he is compelled to walk, a destiny marked out for him by an infinitely wise and good power, which governs all things? Answer. Yes, I believe so. I believe that we are just as much the creatures of destiny as this world is. It performs its revolutions in perfect harmony with the law of its destiny. We do the same. We may think that we can do this or that, as we please. We may suppose, in our ignorance of the great law by which we are controlled, that we have an all-sufficient and omnipotent will of our own, but, after all, it is very insignificant, and of small account, when measured by the great governing power of the universe. Question. How far, then, is man a free agent, responsible for his actions on the earth? Answer. That is a question very hard to answer. Because man is subject to the law of a certain destiny. I believe that law does not infringe upon his freedom, upon all the rights which belong to him as an individualized being. I believe that the judge of every intelligent being is within themselves, and I believe they are accountable only to that judge, and in this way, for instance, suppose the mercantile man makes a mistake in his mercantile operations today. He looks over the ground, and sees where he might have done better, he regrets what he has done, and in the future he avoids taking the same steps under similar circumstances. Now, he has judged himself. He has paid the penalty through regret, and he has come out into a newer light in consequence of the mistake. He knows more than he did before, he would hardly do the same thing over again. So it is with regard to all things in life. If a child burns its hand by putting it into the flame, you will hardly get it to do the same thing again. It will fear the flame. The old adage, "A burnt child fears the fire," is a very true one. It holds good in the intellectual realm, and in every other. Question. With reference to my former question, I would ask if there are not conditions in the life of man over which he has no control, which prevent him from doing otherwise than as he does. Answer. Most certainly, there are conditions surrounding humanity over which humanity has not the slightest control. The fire possesses destructive properties. And so long as it is the fire it will possess those properties. If you place yourself in a position to be burned by it, it will burn you. You cannot control it. And throughout all the circumstances of life, conditions are constantly coming up over which we have no control. For instance, You had no control over the way and manner of your birth, no control over the organic life which you possess. You found that you possessed it when you came to a certain standard of intelligence. You had no voice in the matter whatever. The law, or nature, operated without even asking if it might operate in your case, and that same law goes with you all through life. Just so far as you understand the law thoroughly, you can make it your servant, and no further. But you never can thoroughly understand the law, therefore there will always be conditions over which you have no control. Question. Does not man's assertion of his free agency spring from his ignorance of the forces which control him? This was at page 153. Answer. I think so. Question. Have not good and evil always coexisted? Could we understand one without the other? Answer. No, certainly not. Why, if I thought that the devil was going to take his leave from the world of mind and the world of matter, I should be miserable indeed, and for this reason, I should know that God, or the great, good power, would be robbed of half its glory. What would you know about good, fine, pleasant weather, if there were no storms? You would weary of it very soon. What would you know about appreciating the sunshine, if there were no clouds that passed over the sun's face? Why, I think the devil is one of our very best friends, and instead of putting horns and hoofs to him, we ought to array him in garments of light, and call him what God calls him, very good. Question. Are we not placed here in order to gain knowledge from adverse circumstances, that we may be better fitted for the life which is to come? Answer. Why, certainly. Do you suppose you would appreciate the joys of what you call heaven, the heaven of the spirit world, if you had always passed through a sort of an easy, free life here? Why, no. You would say, I had about as good as this on the earth. You would hardly know which you liked best. They who have been crushed under the wheels of adversity are the souls who know how to enjoy heaven. Why, I am only sorry I did not have more adversity when here. I am only sorry I did not drink deeper of the cup of bitterness, because if I had, I should have a keener relish for the joys of heaven. My relish is very keen now, but it would have been enhanced a hundredfold if I had only suffered more when here. That is why the returning spirits always tell you that though they suffered much here, they cannot afford to part with the remembrance of it, they are very glad to have passed through it. Question. This being the case, then, in order to secure the future happiness of our friends, ought we not to begin to torment them all in our power while here? Answer. By no means. And you could not if you would, for the law of your destiny has you in its grasp, and you cannot escape it. You can torment them just so far, but no farther. If you have a mind to, you may try it, and see how far you can go. You would very soon weary of it, for you would find the torment reacting so fully upon yourself, that you would get sick of it. By William E. Channing, March 12, 1868. Question. What is experimental religion? Or, in other words, what is the influence spoken of as being the workings of the Holy Ghost? For there is evidently some unseen, moving power. Answer. Every kind of religion is in itself experimental. There never was a religion that was not an experimental religion, that I have had any knowledge of whatever. This Holy Spirit spoken of by your correspondent is the power which determines concerning the particular caste and color of the religion which we shall possess, and it gives a very great variety, no two possessing the same kind of religion. 1,000 persons may worship at the same religious shrine, and yet in essential individual worship all differ from each other. This Holy Spirit and this divine power which determines between good and evil is the power that will unlock the gates of heaven to every soul individually, not collectively. Straight and narrow is the way. One soul cannot come into heaven by any possibility, by any other way except its own, the way that God has marked out for it. You cannot go to heaven by my way. I cannot by yours. It is no use trying. You may try to climb up by my way, But you cannot do it. You will find that you have mistaken your power. All must knock at the gates of heaven through the law of their own Holy Ghost. They can by no possibility enter heaven in any other way, and as all souls enter heaven, or suppose they do, by some religious light, so all must enter by their own particular religious light.